Our last case for today is United States against Moulton. Okay, anytime, Mr. Butts.
Thank you. Good morning. I represent Edward Moulton. My name's Eric Butts. We'd raised several issues in our brief, beginning with the fact that we felt that the sentence itself was unreasonable, the sentence that was imposed by Judge Reagan. And in relying on that, we would look at his comments during the transcript of disposition, where he gave short shrift to Mr. Moulton's positive attributes and several matters in aggravation that he mentioned which aren't factually correct.
That sounds to me more like a procedural attack on the sentence.
Well, I think the sentence is not substantively reasonable.
Attack, because when you're criticizing the judge for failing to take enough account, say, of a 3553A factor, that's a procedural challenge. Then if you say at the end of the day the length of the sentence was just way too long, which I understand you'd be saying, too, that's the substantive challenge. It's the 108-month sentence, right?
Exactly. Some of the things he said in his disposition are not correct, where he cited to felony trespass, a felony drug possession. He keeps referring to the juvenile possession of the weapon as a felony. I don't know if it was a felony or not. But one of the things that I think is notable is in the transcript of the disposition at page, I think it's 26, where he talks about the fact that it is not all Edward Moulton's fault, but then he goes on and says, well, it really is. And he talks about the city of Detroit and their crime, the city of St. Louis' crime. In his memo itself, his sentencing memo, he mentions Edward Moulton's name on three pages, and 31 pages talk about the decline of the city of St. Louis. It seems that the judge is not affording Mr. Moulton the particularized consideration that is required by the statute.
But I'm looking at page 26, and he goes on, 26, 27, he goes on for quite a while about mitigating factors, a horrific childhood, abuse, and he talks about his siblings and so on. So,
I'm sorry, Judge, it was on page 28. It was my mistake. At the very bottom of the page, beginning of line 19, he said, today I want it's clear that I don't think the problems East St. Louis or its citizenry face are solely the result. But then he says, but I do suggest that there's data to suggest that it's because of people like Mr. Moulton. East St. Louis has been going down the drain for 50 years. Edward Moulton's 23 years old. I think it, you know, it strains credulity to say that Edward Moulton is the problem.
Says he's not saying that. I mean, this is not a situation where the judge is blaming the decline of East St. Louis or Western civilization on Mr. Moulton.
Well, it sure seems like it in his 31 pages talking about all of the problems of East St. Louis.
He talks about East St. Louis, but I think what's important is he takes it back to Mr. Moulton, though. He looks at particularized factors for Mr. Moulton.
Then why is this? Well, then again, our position is that it should not have been as important as it was to the judge to spend 36 pages or 31 pages, whatever it is, talking about all the other people he sentenced. And in the individuals that he cites that have received sentences, only one of them is sentenced for a gun offense. The rest of them are all fraud and other offenses. And if it, again, the judge makes particular note of the fact of all of the problems of East St. Louis and does say, page 28 in his transcript of disposition, it's people like Edward Moulton that are causing the problem. But in the sentencing memorandum, we have dozens and dozens of people, none of whom have committed gun offenses. They're all fraud offenses. And that's what's driving the problems of East St. Louis, is the fraud and the graft and corruption in East St. Louis. The judge doesn't mention Mr. Moulton's depression, the fact that he attempted suicide on a couple of occasions. He says that, you know, he has four other siblings that were raised by the grandparents, but yet the situation was different with Edward Moulton that's contained in the pre-sentence report. The other siblings weren't abused, weren't beat by the parents as Edward Moulton was.
So I don't remember you emphasizing the depression and the
suicide. It was in the pre-sentence report, Judge.
So you didn't make anything of that in your brief?
No, Judge.
Yeah.
And in the sentencing memorandum that I filed, I talked about the problems that Edward Moulton had growing up in the neighborhood, how he was obviously, and I believe, victimized by other people in the area, growing up without parents, without loving parents, and the judge made some mention of that.
Said something about those things.
Excuse me?
The judge said something about those.
Yes, he did. He said briefly some things about that. But I think that the statute and I think the case law demands that the judge make a more particularized assessment of Edward Moulton's positive factors. Here, I think the judge slid right past Edward Moulton's positive factors and went into the problems with East St. Louis and wants to make Edward Moulton an example for the problems that East St. Louis suffers today. That's our position. We also raised an issue as to the gang testimony that was admitted at trial. Think that it was unduly prejudicial, and I realize that oftentimes the courts say any evidence that's submitted against a defendant is unduly prejudicial. This was a situation, unlike many of the cases that were cited by the government, where an individual's gang membership was not part of the offense itself, was not a part prior to the commission of the offense, was not admitted to by the defendant, and we believe that it was improper to allow the agents to testify to that fact. The gang membership, we think, only served to bolster the government's case as to Mr. Moulton's possession of the firearm.
So the judge did tell the jury, though, that it was coming in only to shed light on the motive for possessing the firearm.
I understand that, but I still think that it was
unduly. Think they didn't pay any attention? Or
do I think that the jury didn't pay any attention?
To the instruction, yeah. He says, this evidence that is regarding gang membership cannot be considered by you for any other purpose.
Then what's the purpose in introducing it? It's a strict liability offense.
Well,
whether
why
or not
did
he
you
possessed it, it was introduced to show motive of Edward Moulton. It was introduced to try to show why he would have the gun on that date.
But not his propensity to have guns, just the reason he had the gun.
I said Agent Mann's test. I apologize, Judge. I didn't mean to cut you off. Agent Mann's testified at great length when he was either an expert or a fact witness as to the fact that people in A.C. St. Louis, the gang people, have guns, they carry guns, they shoot each other. Of course it was. It was propensity. It was in order to bolster their case when they didn't have any evidence of Edward Moulton's possession of the weapon other than they found a gun. Nobody saw him with a gun.
Circumstantial evidence. Surely, I mean, he was standing there. They find the gun. He walks back near the tree. They find the gun almost immediately by that tree. I mean, I understand they didn't find it on him, but
they didn't find it on him, and both of the agents testified they did not see him with a gun. There was also a man across the street, Torcus Boone, who was good friends with the Brown family. I think that Torcus Boone was involved in some fashion, and we never got into that. The Brown family was involved in some fashion. Apparently, Edward Moulton was called to the scene, but yet there were no phone records that he ever received a call. I don't know how he received word that Kenneth Brown was shot. I think there was a lot of, there's very little evidence to support exactly what he was doing that day, but it was certainly bolstered by the gang testimony. It was certainly bolstered by the fact that Agents Mann and Yingling both talked about gangs and how dangerous they are in East St. Louis.
Okay. If you'd like to save a little rebuttal time.
Judge, I'll certainly come back up here and answer any questions I have, but I think that it's pretty straightforward.
Okay. Thank you so much. Ms. Morrissey.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Thank you very much. Kit Morrissey, on behalf of the United States. I was trial counsel also in this matter. I think the court has recognized the problem with Mr. Butts' argument regarding his allegation that the district court failed to spend enough time discussing Mr. Moulton's positive attributes.
But what are we to make? I mean, this is not the first district judge kind of go off into a sociological ramble about the town or the city or the state of the world. And, I mean, we're all entitled to have our thoughts about that, but why is that pertinent to sentencing Mr. Moulton?
I think the court should look at both what was said at the hearing, the sentencing hearing, in conjunction with the sentencing memorandum. The court's memorandum certainly was more directed to the sentencing factor of general deterrence as opposed to specific deterrence. It was also very much directed at the need to protect this community, which is riddled with crime, particularly violent crime. So it was directed, I think, more particularly, Your Honor, the written memorandum to those factors. But at the sentencing hearing itself, which can't be disregarded as much as I think counsel for the defense might like, the judge makes it very clear that there were four factors weighing heavily in his mind. Those factors were Mr. Moulton's likelihood of recidivism. That weighed very heavily on the court's mind, given this young man's violent record, his inability to be successful on any type of court order, court sentencing, the need to individually deter Mr. Moulton, promoting respect for the law, and then, of course, general deterrence and adequate punishment. So the judge was clearly considering all of the 3553A factors. In a sentencing memorandum, it was more geared to a couple of those factors, as the court recognizes, the city in general. Judge Reagan has done that in previous sentencing hearings, sort of given the history of crime in the city of East St. Louis. This court has, and as the defense recognized at the sentencing hearing, this court has upheld that what Judge Reagan did as recognizing the need for general deterrence. And
it's just that it needs to be taught. You don't want to sentence somebody as, you know, the sacrificial person for the fact that a particular area may have a very bad crime record. You know, you need to tie the sentence to the individual. That's the message of Booker. That's the message of 3553A.
Yes.
And so there comes a point, and we have seen a couple of cases like this, where we can't be confident that the judge really did keep his eye or her eye on the ball. And you know, maybe this isn't one of those cases. Maybe Judge Reagan stayed on the correct side of the line. But it's a problem that comes up if the judge doesn't put in context, why is this relevant to Mr. Moulton's mm-hmm. sentence?
I think the judge did here tie it back to Mr. Moulton because he said specifically in both his oral comments at the sentencing hearing and in the sentencing memorandum that in his 13 years experience on the bench, a problem he saw was not just a felon in possession, but a felon in possession with the violent record of the type that Mr. Moulton had. So I think he did tie the need for general deterrence to the specific problem Mr. Moulton presented. Again, that's someone in possession of a firearm who has already proven himself to be a violent felon. So he did tie it back in that respect, Your Honor. And, of course, he's required under 3553A to consider general deterrence, the need to protect the community from people like Mr. Moulton. So I would just point out in this case, I think he did tie it back to Mr. Moulton. I would like to just briefly then address, unless this court has further questions on the reasonableness of the sentence, the admission of the evidence relating to gangs. This court has noted on numerous occasions in numerous cases, gang evidence is certainly relevant evidence because motive is always relevant. Relevant evidence is generally admissible as long as it is not overcome by a degree of prejudice that is unacceptable.
But did the court do a 403 analysis of this evidence here, or did he just say it's relevant to motive and it comes?
He did. He did the 403 analysis. Excuse me, Your Honor. He did the analysis in both his ruling on the motion in limine. He discussed all of the cases and the 402 and 403 analysis. He discussed at length the Lane case of this court, Butler, Montgomery. He particularly relied on Ozuno, all of which do the 402-403 balancing test. He touched on the 404B analysis, but that was not the government's
this isn't really a
for that. No, I agree with you. This is strictly a 402-403 analysis situation. The courts have consistently held that motive is relevant, and if the government can show motive, it should come in. That's been established law for years and years, back to 1894, according to the one case. So the judge found that the relevance of the evidence was not substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice. I would just point out, too, Your Honor, that I think the defendant suggests there was a lot more gang evidence than there really was at trial. There was certainly evidence that Kenneth Brown was the leader of the Waverly Crips, and there was certainly evidence that Mr. Moulton had an association of Kenneth Brown, however slight, and there was, of course, the direct evidence from the cellmate that Mr. Moulton had claimed to be a Trey 9 Waverly Crip who does the type of thing he did in this case for his gang. So here the gang evidence was very closely and directly related to the case before the jury. So I think the court clearly made the right decision there. So I have nothing further unless the court has questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Brown?
Thank you. The prosecution talked about the serious violent nature of Mr. Moulton. Mr. Moulton has one prior, violent felony for armed robbery. That's it. All the others are misdemeanors. And my concern is that the same as the court is that it seems like Mr. Moulton is becoming a sacrificial lamb for the problems of East St. Louis. In two cases that were decided in this court, United States v. Rigsby, which is 501 Fed APBX 545, and then United States v. Ingram, which is 427 Fed APBX 531, which I believe were both Judge Reagan cases. Judge Reagan sentenced both individuals to the max, and in both cases talks about the criminal history, which was six. One of them, the individual, tried to shoot at some law enforcement officers. And it doesn't follow with Mr. Moulton for Judge Reagan to talk about the problems that East St. Louis has and lay these at his feet.
Judge specifically distinguished those two cases.
He
went to great lengths to distinguish your client from those two defendants.
Well, he sentenced Edward Moulton to 108 months. He sentenced Casey Rigsby, who in his sentence and in the court's opinion said he's the most dangerous criminal I've seen in 30 years. Criminal history category 6 had 24 criminal history points. Mr. Moulton was a criminal history category 4, had one prior violent felony. I, with all due respect to the court, I don't think that's a fair statement of – I don't think Judge Reagan was being completely candid. And I like Judge Reagan. I think he's a wonderful guy. But it seems like you don't write a 39-page sentencing memo as to the problems of East St. Louis and then say, but you're not to blame. And in there, he said, statistical data suggests that people like Edward Moulton are responsible for the problems of the city. That's not correct. Edward Moulton's 23 years old. You know, there's a lot of conversation about how he didn't make much of his life. He's 23 years old. Thank you, Judge. Thank you for listening to
Mr. Moulton's case. You were appointed, were you not?
Yes, Judge.
The court appreciates very much your assistance to your client and to us. Thank you. And thanks as well to the government. We'll take the